Welcome to Law You Should Know. The law affects every aspect of our lives, our home, our jobs, and our recreational activities. Now you can learn about the law and how to protect yourself against the loss of your liberty or property. Learn how to stand up for your rights and seek compensation when you have been wronged. Your host for Law You Should Know is attorney Kenneth J. Landau with the Mineola Law Firm of Shane, Dock, Stanisi, and Corker. He's a member of the Committee on Professional Ethics of the Bar Association of Nassau County and counsel to the Nassau Academy of Law. And now, here is your host for Law You Should Know, attorney Kenneth J. Landau.
Hi, this is Ken Landau, and welcome to Law You Should Know. Today we're going to be discussing what the quadro is, and you'll find out what that means in a moment. It's very important to matrimonial attorneys and also general public and anyone who's going through a divorce. Attorneys can obtain CLE credit by listening to this program and writing down the code at the end of the show, and I'll give you more details on that later in the program. Our guest to tell us important information about what a quadro is Adam Kuhn, and he's a matrimonial associate in the law office of Stephen Kuhn, Attorneys at Law on Long Island. And Adam was a graduate of Syracuse Law School and a member of the Law Review there. Adam, welcome to Law You Should Know.
Thank you, Ken. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And you and your work have to draft and review and negotiate many quadro agreements. It's abbreviated QDRO, but just tell us what it means.
Sure. So a quadro, as you said, it's a qualified domestic relation order. And to unpack that a little bit, basically, when people are getting divorced, they have to decide upon how their retirement benefits, which could be a pension, a 401k, an IRA, for example, a 457 plan, how they're going to be divided. And people will typically have what's called a stipulation of settlement agreement, which basically says how everything's going to be divided. And if the agreement says that retirement assets need to be divided, the retirement plans will not divide those retirement accounts unless there is a separate court order, which is the quadro, because basically federal law protects people's retirement assets from being sought by creditors. So over the years, an exception to that was the quadro. So it's a separate court order that is signed by a judge, and it basically follows the language in the party's stipulation of settlement agreement, and it allows the plan, once it's signed by the judge, it allows the plan to effectuate the terms of their agreement and to divide the retirement account.
And it might be splitting an asset now, or it might be splitting a pension down the road.
Yes, that's correct, because for pensions, for example, you might have someone who, let's say they're a teacher or a police officer and they have pensions. If they're only 40 years old, they may still be working, especially teachers. They might be working for another 15, 20 years perhaps. So the pension, like you said, it won't be divided right then and there, but it provides that when that person retires, it basically gives the language and instructions for how it's going to be divided. But also, like you said, assets such as 401k accounts, those can be divided then and there. Usually, what happens is the agreement will say what the person who's not, who doesn't have the account, they're called the alternate payee. They don't have the account, but that says what they're going to get. And then usually there's a rollover to an account in their name, and they get their share of their spouse's 401k account, and that can happen pretty much right after the plan gets the quadro signed from the court.
And this might cover IRAs as well?
Yes, it certainly can. Yep, IRAs, 457 plans, variable supplement plans, 403Bs, annuities. Yes, that's true. Some plans actually don't require the quadros for IRAs, but or annuity accounts, but every plan's a little different. But yes, some do require it for IRAs.
And just the contrast, if it was a simple bank account, the stipulation of divorce settlement might just explain how that's going to be split, whether it's 50-50 or something else. But these are more complicated type of investments that are also regulated by various laws.
Yes, the retirement accounts are regulated by law. There's a called ERISA, employer. It's basically a federal law that was enacted in the 1970s that basically protects people's retirement accounts from being taken or assigned to creditors. So once that law was enacted, the question then is, well, you know, how do we distribute retirement accounts to spouses or former spouses if we're saying that creditors can't attack or get parts of their retirement plans? So that's essentially a carve-out of that law is the quadro. So that way, it's, as you said, it is regulated. It's more complicated than just a bank account, for example, as you said.
The administrators of these plans are not going to release the funds without the quadro.
That's absolutely correct, because the agreement could say the wife will receive such and such from the 401k account or the pension account, and which is all well and good. But if you don't have the quadro, when the person who is the participant in the account, basically the person who's the police officer or the teacher, when they retire down the road, the plan without the quadro is not going to send any money to the alternate payee or the spouse of the police officer or the teacher without the quadro. And the quadro, once it's signed by the court, has to be actually sent to the plan so that the plan can put the quadro in their file. So that way, when the participant retires, they know instructions of what has to occur.
And the other person will get their whatever percentage they've been allocated.
Right. So typically, what's divided is the marital portion. So what basically that means is whatever was in the account or was accumulated in the account between the date of marriage to the date the divorce action started is the marital portion. And the general rule is 50% to each spouse of whatever accumulated during the marriage.
During that marital portion. And
right.
The pension may have started before and the pension may continue after, or the work life. So that's why it's important the amount be carved out and divided according to the plan. So let's take a step back. It's a routine part of any divorce, but I know as you were an expert at this and you wrote a little article for the National Lawyer explaining to lawyers the various important steps that must be followed by all matrimonial attorneys in getting it right when the quadro's prepared and submitted to the court and submitted to other pension plans and other agencies. So let's start with the stipulation divorce is going to be language governing the quadro. So what does it need to say, and what are some variations of that depending on how the parties negotiate it?
Sure. So for a pension, the language you would use for a pension is different than the language you would use for a 401k account or a 403b. So there's certain things that should be in the agreement. So for a pension, for example, some key language that you'll probably see in almost any agreement is what's called the Majauskas formula. What the Majauskas formula basically is it basically gives a formula or a fraction for calculating what accumulated in the account between the date of marriage and the date the divorce action started. So it's basically a formula that's telling the retirement plan to calculate the marital portion based on the dates between the date of marriage and the date the divorce action started. So that's probably the one of the more important things that you'll see in the agreement. Second thing is often what people will have in agreements is what's called a joint survivor annuity. So what that means is if someone is a participant and they've been working, once they retire, the alternate payee, meaning their spouse or their former spouse, will get a check every month once the person retires. But let's say the participant passes away and the alternate payee or the former spouse is still alive at that point. Does the alternate payee, do they stop getting the checks, or do the checks continue? If the agreement is silent on a death benefits, then the case law says that the alternate IPE does not get benefits anymore. So you want to be clear about if there's going to be any death benefits, which is called a joint survivor annuity. So it allows the alternate payee, even if the participant predeceases them, it allows the alternate payee to continue getting payments for the rest of their life from the plan. If the agreement doesn't say anything about joint survivor annuities, the case law says that the alternate payee gets nothing.
And what about if the pension person, the person with the pension dies before they start to take their pension, and the alternate payee is counting on some percentage pursuant to the divorce agreement?
So if the participant passes away and before they retire and the alternate payee is still alive, then the question becomes, are there any pre-retirement death benefits for the alternate payee? And that's, again, it's similar to what I was saying about the joint survivor annuity. It really depends on what the agreement says. The case law is that if the agreement is silent about pre-retirement death benefits, then the alternate payee very well could be out of luck. So you want to be careful that if you're a drafting attorney and you represent the client who is the alternate payee, you want to make sure that the agreement addresses pre-retirement death benefits, and that if so that it's clear that if the participant dies before retirement, that the alternate payee gets their share of the pre-retirement death benefit, basically whatever share of it accumulated during the marriage.
And is there a cost for providing those protections and forcing the pension plan to make those payments if the person who has the pension dies before or during those, while the benefits being paid out?
Yes. So for example, if the person is now getting payments from the retirement plan and the alternate payee is now getting payments, the plan will have to calculate what the portion is based on the participant service time in the plan that they were working. So if someone picks a joint survivor annuity for their former spouse, the plan is going to adjust the payments because now they have to pay not only for the participant's life, but they also have to potentially pay for the alternate payee's life. So what the plan will do is they'll take the ages of the participant as well as the alternate payee and calculate what they should be paying so that they can make sure there's enough funding in the account to pay out for the rest of the participant's life as well as for maybe even the alternate payee's life if there's the joint survivor annuity. However, if there is no joint survivor annuity, the plan can pay more because they don't have to worry about paying for the rest of the alternate payee's life if they're predeceased by the participants.
And what about the cost of pre-retirement death benefits? Does someone have to pay for that?
It's really based on the participant's service time. So if the participant passes away before they retire, then the plan will calculate whatever the pre-retirement death benefit may be, and then they would pay that out to the alternate payee. So in terms of a cost, it really depends on what the service time was, because then again, they now don't have to pay the participant for their pension because now the participant passed away before they retired. So there could be a difference with that because they never retired. But once again, it really depends on their service time.
Is that automatic or that has to be requested by the person with the pension to make sure the alternate payee is covered?
The pre-retirement death benefit, it really needs to first be in the agreement so that the plan can follow the terms of the agreement essentially the quadro needs to mirror what's in the settlement agreement. So if the settlement agreement is silent on pre-retirement death benefits, then the quadro won't have anything about pre-retirement death benefits. So at the time of retirement, if the quadro has been put in place with the plan, and by the time the participant retires, the option will have already been selected for that person. So by the time they retire, they'll get a sheet where they have to pick the option selection. But if they've already had the quadro done, that box will already be filled in, and the participant doesn't have to check anything off.
Okay, we've got to take a short break. Adam, thank you for walking us through some of the importance and the various language of the quadro. When we return, we'll discuss the mechanics and the timeline for drafting and submitting the Quadro. You're listening to Law You Should Know. We're talking with attorney Adam H. Kuhn about Quadro agreements and why they're an important part of any divorce agreements. And it's very important for attorneys and the public to be aware of them. You're listening to Law You Should Know here on 90.3 WHPC, the voice of Nassau Community College. And we'll be back in a moment.
This portion of programming on WHPC is brought to you on behalf of the Nassau County Bar Association, who wants you to know about ADR, Alternate Dispute Resolution, which can help you avoid costly, lengthy, and uncertain litigation in court. By resolving disputes through mediation or arbitration, it gives you control over who decides your case. A mediator helps all parties to reach an agreement they can live with, or an arbitrator selected by the parties hears and decides the case. Your attorney can still represent you, but you control who decides your case. ADR is fast and less stressful than fighting in court, and it is a great way to resolve divorce, employment, or commercial disputes. ADR is now offered through the Nassau County Bar Association. Find out more about how ADR can help resolve your dispute by calling 516-747-4070 or visit nassaubar.org.
Once again, we continue with Law You Should Know. From the Mineola Law Firm of Shane, Doxton, E.C. Corker, and Sauer, here is attorney Kenneth J. Landau.
Hi, this is Ken Landau, and welcome back to Law You Should Know. We're talking about Quadro agreements. It's QDRO. They're, as you've heard from our guest, attorney Adam H. Kuhn, they're an important part of any divorce agreement, and they have important consequences for pension plans and other retirement benefits, or and also 401k. Attorneys can earn CLE credit by listening to this program through the Nassau Academy of Law. You can reach them at 516-747-4464 or at nassaubar.org, and we'll give you the code at the end of this program. And Adam is an associate attorney in the matrimonial department of the law office of Stephen P. Kuhn in Port Jefferson Station, Long Island, New York. And he also is a graduate of Syracuse Law School, where he was on the Law Review. And he wrote an article about Quadros for the Nassau Lawyer, and that's why he's knowledgeable and is our guest now. Adam, I know it's a very complicated area of law. You've done a terrific job of explaining it. So if the language, the parties have to agree on the language, it's put in the stipulation of divorce. At what point do they need to request the Quadro order? And I understand from your article that usually a third party consultant is going to draft the order, you know, at the request of the attorneys. But at what part, at what time does this take place?
Sure. So in terms of the time it takes place, it's always after the parties sign the stipulation agreement, but there's no set rule on when it happens, because sometimes people want to do it right away. They want to get the quadro done and be done with it. Sometimes people want to wait a while because it costs money to get the quadros. It's obviously a small amount in the long run because we're talking about pensions, 401k accounts, but sometimes people want to hold off a little bit. So people might wait a year. They might wait a few years if they're young and they're not going to be retiring for a while. They may put it off, but I always think it's better to get it out of the way because you don't want to sit on it for too long.
And you don't want a loose end out there.
Yeah.
Now, let's say the proposed Quadro order comes back from the consultant, do the attorneys, what if either attorney has problems with the language? Do they have to agree among themselves and get the preparation company to revise it before it's sent to the pension plan or the other administrator of the fund?
Yes, that's true. So the company that prepares the Quadro, they will send the attorney a draft to take a look at it. And if, let's say, their settlement agreement says that the wife is to get $50,000 from the 401k, but in the draft of the Quadro it says the wife gets $25,000 from the 401k. So if the attorney should be careful to read through and make sure that it corresponds with what they agreed to. And if it says the wrong amount, then the attorney would let the company know that this needs to be corrected, and they would then have the company make the correction. And then at that point, the company, once it's corrected, will send it onto the plan so that the plan can move forward with what's called the pre-approval process, so that the plan basically eyeballs it before it's signed by the judge. So that way they let you know if it looks okay, because there's nothing worse than having it signed by the court and then the plan tells you, no, it's no good. So that's why we like to have it, the plan likes to, or the company likes to have it pre-approved by the plan.
And when that consultant is drafting the language, are they going to take the raw language of this concerning the quadro in the settlement agreement, or are they going to get a more detailed submission from each party's attorney?
So what actually takes place is the language itself really comes from, it follows the settlement agreement, but the exact language has to follow the required language by the retirement plan. So every retirement plan has their own language. There's a retirement plan for police officers. There's a retirement plan for teachers, for example, electricians, railroad employees. And those plans have their own manuals, really, with language that needs to be in the quadros to be approved by the plan. So the quadro, yes, it will follow what the people intended to in their agreement, but it will have to be in conformity with the language that the plan has in their own company rules.
And is it possible that one quadro agreement could be used and submitted to different pension plans or 401k administrators or IRA administrators? Or do you need a different quadro that has followed all these steps for each asset?
For pensions, it really needs to be a separate quadro for each pension. However, I have gotten creative and seen other attorneys get creative with 401ks, because to put everything in one quadro. For example, let's say that the husband has a 401k with $200,000 in it all during the marriage, and the wife has a 401k with $100,000 all during the marriage. Sometimes instead of you could do just two quadros, one for each 401k, but to save money and to save time, what a lot of people will do is they'll do one quadro and they'll say, okay, the husband will roll over $50,000 from his 401k to the wife's 401k to equalize, so that way they each end up with $150,000, and you do it in one quadro versus two, and it saves everybody money and it saves everybody time. So with 401ks, you can do one quadro for all of them.
And what if the two, you know, sometimes there's no love lost in divorces. What if the two sides cannot agree on the quadro language to be submitted to the pension plan or the court? Can they submit dueling quadros?
You know, I have seen that happen, actually, where one attorney didn't agree with the language in the quadro, and they submitted their own quadro for the court to sign and had the court decide which one they were going to sign. So yes, that is possible. You generally, the third party, the company that does it, they do these every day. So they, as you know, they're pretty good at following what is in the agreement as well as what the plan requires. But yes, if an attorney believes that the language in the quadro is not reflective of what was they agreed to, then they could submit to the court their own quadro and ask for the court to sign that one.
Okay, and then just moving it along, once the quadro, let's say, is in good form, or the quadros, if there are more than one, they are submitted to the court, and the court eventually signs off on them?
Yes, that's correct. So the court will sign off on it, and then they will send back to the attorney the signed quadro. Essentially, you want to request a certified copy from the county clerk's office, and they'll send you the certified copy. And at that point, the attorney sends the certified copy to the plan and requests that the plan file it in their records, so that way they know what has to occur, whether it's for a pension or for a 401k, so that way they can enact what the what the quadro says.
And can you give us a range of what the timeline would be from the time the attorney submits something to the quadro drafting consultant until it's finally approved by the court?
Sure. So the plans often can take a while to. I've seen sometimes plans take up to a year or even over a year to pre-approve the quadro just because they may be getting a lot of them, or they just may not have a large department, so it takes them a while to pre-approve. So some plans you could see taking a year for pre-approval. Other plans I've seen in just a couple of months or even weeks. So every plan is a little different. So you could say that from the beginning to end, starting from hiring the third-party company to when the quadro's done and filed with the plan, over a year. But it really varies based on how long it takes to get pre-approval.
Okay. You've provided a lot of information during this show. I can just give you one more minute if there's any final tips you would like to offer.
Well, I would say with the quadros, I think having a step-by-step checklist can actually be very helpful, especially when you're starting, because there's a lot of steps, obviously, as I've outlined in my article outlines, and it's easy to forget something or miss a step. So I would even suggest coming up with a checklist of what has to happen in terms of contacting the third-party company, reviewing the quadro, sending it back to sending it to the court once you get pre-approval, sending it to the plan once the plan once the court signs it. So I would say a checklist, I think, can be very helpful because there's a lot of steps. But like anything, the more you do it, the more comfortable you'll get, and it won't seem as intimidating.
And Adam, do you have your article posted on your website?
I don't have it.
Okay. Well, just tell us where your website is, because I'm sure you're going to post it soon.
Sure. Our website is www.divorcelawyersuffolkcounty.com.
Okay. And I'd like to thank our guest, Adam Kuhn, for discussing this most important issue of the quadro with us. Attorneys can request CLE credit by following the procedures of the Nassau Academy of Law. The code for this show is K1985. That's K1985. If you missed any portion of the program or you want to hear it again, podcasts of this and other programs for Law You Should Know are available at nccradio.org. And thank you for listening to Law You Should Know on 90.3, the voice of Nassau Community College, and also over the internet, nccradio.org. Please join us next week for another program of Law You Should Know.